Hello and welcome to the Jeff and Jamie feed. We're so glad to have you with us here. Today we're talking about something that is not necessarily a fun topic, but it is something that's very necessary for business owners and entrepreneurs alike. We're talking about closing a business when that's you know it's terrible. Time. Jeff, we've done this before.
Oh, it is brutal. It's something you never want to do, something you don't picture doing, and you're usually in pretty bad straits when you get there.
Yes. So we've done this before with Crepe Cellar Kitchen and Pub, which was our first restaurant. We opened it in 2009 and we operated that for a good 13 years profitably and then decided to close. And so we're going to explore a little bit of that. And today we actually don't have any guests. It's a lot of picking our brains about when to close a business and how and why and all of that. So, Jeff, if you could set the scene for us as far as the Crepe Cellar business goes and, you know, looking at 2009 and then into COVID, et cetera.
Yeah, and I'll start just generally about our business. It is a lovely, exciting, awesome. We love the restaurant business, obviously. This is what we do, but there's a lot of pressure. You have the ability to make a lot of revenue, but the ability to make profit is very, very difficult. So you get to a point where even a place that's profitable, if you're normally making 5-6% profit and then you miss your food cost by 1% or 2% and you miss labor by 1% or 2%, all of a sudden your profits have been cut in half, and it gets brutal. And then you look back on the year and you say, we did all of this work, you know, to make $30,000, $40,000, $50,000. And, you know, at some point, even if you're profitable, it's probably not worth it. And you'd rather just shut down.
Yeah. And I guess that's the thing with the restaurant business where, you know, retail, I think maybe is probably around 35% or so, I think, margin wise. Restaurants, we are always shooting for about 10%. But we don't always hit that. We're often lower than that and trying to just carve out ways of reaping profits. So I remember in 2019 when Crepe Cellar was something you and I started talking a lot about. Do we close the business? Do we create something new or something? But you said to me, Jamie, Crepe Cellar is so profitable right now.
2019 was a great year.
It was a great year. And yeah. You said, we need to reap what we've sown. I remember you saying that to me and that stuck with me because then things changed.
Yeah, a little thing called COVID jumped in
happened.
There.
COVID happened. And that was a big driver of it. COVID was a big driver of it. You know, that was March of 2020 when our restaurant doors were closed. And I think Crepe Cellar struggled a lot during that time, maybe more so than other restaurants.
Yeah, for sure. It kind of just got deflated and it lost the excitement. And for us, too, I think we love creating restaurants so much that, yes, we might be a little over aggressive thinking about, hey, how can we start a new restaurant? Because that's what we like doing and what we enjoy doing. But it has to be the right time. And yeah, while 2019 was not the right time, Crepe Cellar was doing great. But then a lot of things were happening for us where we were growing as a restaurant group. We got a lot better at what we did. The menu that we put out at Crepe Cellar, we weren't getting any credit for it. We weren't getting any credit for the wine program we had, the cocktail program we had, the specials that we were doing.
Do you think a lot of that was because it was an older restaurant? You're not hitting the news. It's not that buzzy and hot of a topic.
Yeah, exactly. I think, yeah, people just didn't care that we were doing really cool stuff. And when you have your place named after a $15 item on the menu, everybody's crepes. Coming to get that and not realizing all the other cool stuff that you're doing.
Yeah, it was hard to continue to upsell. Well, it's interesting because a lot of people close a business because they want to retire or because they're not passionate about it anymore or because the business is not making profits. And we certainly saw that a little bit, but that wasn't really the main driver behind closing Crepe Cellar. It wasn't because it was struggling so terribly, and it was, but it was still profitable for every of those 13 years that we were in business. But what do you think was the catalyst that made us like jump in and decide to change?
I would say that 90% of the time people are closing restaurants because of their lease. It's you can usually see they've been open for 5 years or they've been open for 10 or, you know, maybe they have a 7 year lease. And you can usually see those numbers. And that's why people are closing, because they're looking at it. They don't want to re-sign up, re-up their lease. And for us, we own the building that Crepe Cellar was in. So we were in a little bit of a different situation. And I think we loved the space. We also, you know, wanted to put money into the space. It needed some work. So why not invest in ourselves, invest in the space and reboot and tell a new story?
Yeah. And I think just to give listeners some background, the Crepe Cellar space, which is now the Ever Ondolo space, is very unique because we operate three different concepts out of the same kitchen. And so that is another piece to all of this, is that Crepe Cellar was sharing a kitchen with Growlers and then also Raining Donuts, which is our donut shop. And the three of them basically face outward and you cannot tell that the kitchens are shared. But behind in the back of the house, we share a mop sink and we share trash and we share a dishwasher. So that allows those businesses to run efficiently.
It's funny that you bring that up, because one of the things that we didn't realize when we switched over to Ever Ondolo, we had spent most of 2019 restructuring Growler's menu, and we kind of were putting all of our expertise towards using waste left over from Crepe Cellar, where we had, you know, duck left over. So we're like, okay, let's make duck potato skins. And we were doing a lot of really, really cool food at Growlers that year. Mm-hmm. And then when we switched over Crepe Cellar, we didn't realize we had to prep all of the things then that Growlers needed as well, because the items were different at Ever Ondolo. We hadn't kind of thought through that piece enough, which kind of came back to bite us a little bit.
It sure did. It did come back to bite us. And we had to then revamp the Growlers menu, because obviously with restaurants, one of the big things is cross-utilizing ingredients. We sell a lot more food at what was Crepe Cellar and is now Ever Ondolo. And at Growlers, food is not secondary, but we sell a lot of drinks at Growlers. So creating a menu that kind of meshed those two concepts and allowed us to efficiently use product was key. In late 2021 into 2022, we began the process of closing Crepe Cellar. Let's begin by talking about feelings, Jeff.
Oh, wow.
I remember us approaching this very differently. Your feelings versus mine. Do you remember your feelings?
I probably had a whole lot less feelings about it. I did. I was ready to go. I was really excited about doing an Italian concept, and I couldn't wait to jump on it.
And I felt differently. And I think, but it's interesting because
the kids.
Yes. I think people approach closing a business differently. You know, you approached it in a very, numerical way, a very logical way, a very rational way, which was that, hey, we can do better. We can make more profits. We can create a better dining experience and capitalize on the new talents we had from the team of chefs we had brought in, you know, for Supperland and Haberdish as well. And I looked at it and my heart was just breaking. I think it's hard for a lot of people to close a business.
Yeah. I was stressed a lot more financially, I think, of this was the kind of workhorse that had provided for our family for the last 14 years. And here we are, you know, changing it over and seeing what we can do with it. And then there was just so much pressure because we decided to pay all of the employees while we were closed. And so you have no revenue coming in and we're paying everybody. And mathematically, when you're paying front of the house employees out of your pocket, normally a server makes about $213 an hour from us, and then they're making, you know, 10 times that or 20 times that in tips every single night. And so to have to come out of our pocket to, you know, kind of keep those people so they could pay their rent and do those things. But everybody was able to train. We were able to reboot, and all that was lovely. But every single day was extremely expensive, costly, and pressureful.
Yes, I remember you had told me we had about 5 weeks to close down Crepe Cellar and reopen Ever Ondolo. So the way that we budgeted,
I think
this,
I said three and it took five.
It took five. Well, it sure did take five. It did. We needed every bit of it. But in order to make that happen, we began working on some of the renovations prior to Crepe Cellar closing. And we would do this a lot of times on Mondays and into Tuesday, and then we wouldn't open until dinner Tuesday night.
Yeah, a few
and
times
so we
didn't
have a
open
couple days.
Until Wednesday. Like we took mm-hmm. that extra day, but yeah, we got the ceiling painted. One
the tile floor
Monday,
all done.
Floor all done. Yeah, we started chipping away at some of those little projects and
yes,
updating
we did,
the space.
The ceiling, the floor, the siding. And then some of the big things that we had to do that took more than those 2 or 3 days were things like expanding the windows, doing the wallpaper, doing some of the fresh coats of paint.
I didn't realize those little touch. I mean, they're big touches, changing the windows out, but really, it you know, not a huge thing. And the effect that it had on the space, just taking the awning out and letting the light come in more and. The space really feels a lot more elegant and special. And I think those changes we made were well worth it.
I think so, too. It really has it radically changed. And I think when people change over a concept, sometimes you think, oh, just, you know, keep the same tables, the chairs, just change the menu, you know, do, you know, put a new sign out front, you know, just put a little lipstick on it. And that's not what we did. We went to great lengths to create an entirely new brand and concept. And that there was a lot of work with the menu and specifically the challenges in doing Italian food.
That was hard. We had the menu done. We had everything concepted. We knew what pastas we were making. And the consistency was just really hard. Chris Rajinsky, our executive chef at Supperland, who kind of helps with all the culinary with me, we would come and we would try to eat the whole menu every single day. And then we would cross off the things that we cooked really well. And so, you know, you go through the whole menu and then the next day you have about 2/3 of it. And then the next day, maybe half of it. But then we would ask for some items that we had had 2 or 3 days before to get thrown back in that we thought we nailed, and they couldn't do it. And
yes, I remember them being so inconsistent.
The consistency. Our menu over there, just the Italian food to cook it correctly has 2, 3, 4 ingredients. And so it really is about how it's prepared. It's about how much sauce is in there, how much salt's in your water when you're cooking pasta. And so all of those things just became so important. And we really needed to nail them down and get everybody on the same page. That was the big thing. It was, you have to make a dish and make sure that everybody knows what it's supposed to look like, what it's supposed to taste like, how we're cooking it, and everybody has to do it the same and have those same expectations every time. And it was hard getting a new kitchen staff on board.
Yeah, and I think what you're getting at too, just thinking about the idea of closing a business, is for entrepreneurs and business owners, a lot of it is, do you have the vision and passion to make something better, to make something more interesting, more compelling, more sellable to your guests? And in our case, that was one of the biggest drivers, was creating a menu that was pushing the Charlotte food scene further along. Italian food is very simple, but it also can be very elevated. There's all those homemade touches with the pastas and the breads, and you bring in great meats and all that kind of stuff. And we were creating something better, more visionary. And I think that truly was really the reason why we ended up closing down.
Yeah. And I knew, though, probably about a week before we opened, that Ever Ondolo was going to do awesome.
And what was that? What made you think that?
That was when I came in at 6 a.m. because the Calabrian chili pasta that we have, It's basically a bolognese with a lot of Calabrian chilies in there. It was just a disaster, not working well. And I just decided I'm going to go in and I'm going to formulate this and work on this before anybody gets there and just start over and have the, you know, and hopefully have the recipe done. Crazily, that worked and the recipe came together very quickly, but that's not what how I knew that we were going to do well. It was when I came in at 6 a.m. and Alex from Supperland was here helping.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I just knew that coming out of the pandemic, that we wouldn't have somebody come from another restaurant at 6 a.m. to help make focaccia bread and get it ready.
And get it right.
And get it right and dial it in and be working with our new pastry team. Just that kind of love and energy. I just knew that it wouldn't have happened with Crepe Cellar. Nobody would have cared.
Nobody would have cared.
Just been like, get your stuff done, Crepe Cellar.
Yeah,
but this was, hey, we're doing this new concept.
How can I be a part of it?
Yes. People wanted to be a part of it. People wanted to help. And that's when I knew. I was like, this is going to be great.
Yeah, there were many days there'd be 50, 60 people in that small space trying to get it ready. And I would look around like, oh my gosh, we really came together at that time. And in unexpected ways, as you said, we had a lot of support from other chefs in our restaurant group. And that was exactly why we could take that menu to another place. So let's talk a little bit about the profitability and how, like, what were the drivers that allowed, you know, a place like Crepe Cellar, which was becoming less profitable? I know morale was down, things like that. We were selling $15 crepes. What was it about the Ever Andalou menu, Italian food, that enabled us to be able to increase our profitability at that concept, even though we had the same number of tables and so forth?
There's a few things that wildly helped us out. One is, yeah, having your main entree be $15, and it was a stretch. You can't move above $20 for a crepe. You can't, like, $18, $19, no matter what you put in it is kind of the max. And so, you know, our average ticket at Crepe Cellar was pretty small because of that. So it was, you know, around, you know, high 30s, $40 maybe per person. So our per person revenue wasn't keeping up. And so then we switched to Italian food, and all of a sudden we're able to sell multi-courses. So we're able to go from appetizers to pasta to then entrees and sides and dessert. So all of a sudden we have a 4-course meal. And so we're getting, you know, almost twice as much per person in the $65, $70 range per person. And another benefit of that is pasta. We make it all homemade. There's a lot of labor, a lot of love that goes into it. But when you make homemade pasta, you can charge a premium for it. And so our food cost on all those pasta items, finally, you know, we struggled with our food cost over here, you know, running Crepe Cellar for years and years and years. It's just a struggle. We make everything from scratch at all of our restaurants, except for the ketchup. Heinz, there you go. So food cost was always really, really hard for us. But then you throw in pasta where you can, you know, you can have a 10, 15% food cost on a lot of items. And that really, really helped us out to get our food cost in line as a whole. And so that piece was great. And another piece I didn't realize, when we were a Crepe Cellar, even though we were a French cafe, we didn't really sell any wine.
Mm-hmm. No, we didn't. We sold some carafes of wine.
We sold cheap.
I know.
And then bringing Michael on board, our sommelier from Supperland, and having him be our wine director everywhere, and working with Catherine to, who's, you know, also a sommelier, to put that wine program together and really focus on it. But I, you know, we came in here the second night, and there's a wine bottle on every single table.
Yeah.
That never happened with Crepe Cellar.
Yeah, no, you're right. And I think one of the other big things that was key to a successful closure that then turned into a new concept was how strategic we were about kind of revamping the space. Part of it's exactly what you're talking about, the wine program. We went from, you know, having a little bit of a, I'll say, a hodgepodge of wines on our list to a very curated list by Michael Klinger, our sommelier. And we turned one of our server stations into a temped wine storage space.
I really don't like server stations.
Well, I guess they're not revenue generating, right?
Well, they're not revenue generating, and having a we kind of created one on the other side of the restaurant. And it's really helpful to have a place to mise en place stuff and have things sitting, plates and silverware and extra things. But having a little room for people to servers to go hide out in is never helpful, where they can't be seen and they're just sitting there checking their phones. So I love that we were able to get rid of that server station.
It was an incredible addition to have that wine room. But we also in the back of house also created a pasta room. You know, this was, I think when you close a business and you're trying to figure out a new route, you really have to set yourself up to win in the next concept. And we created that whole pasta room as well to give them space.
Yeah, it's tight back there. But yeah, we got the pasta room in. We have a charcuterie cutting place. We fit everything in, and it's really nice and efficient.
A lot of people have asked us now. We're sitting here in Growler's Poor House. We opened this in 2010. People have asked us repeatedly, are you going to close Growler's? What are you going to do with it? You know, is that going to get a refresh? What happens with that? And we've talked about putting money in here and reinvesting, you know, just creating some new, you know, just newness to this space. But we've struggled a little bit deciding to do that. And in part, it's because I think we have an arm tied behind us, because this place, Growler's, is highly impacted by our donut shop, which is in the back of house here. If you go through the back doors, you will run into our donut shop. It's an 82 square foot space, and basically it holds enough room for a donut machine, a coffee maker, a little bit of a, you know, donut prep area, and maybe two individuals and a hand sink. And that's all it is. But that place has really impacted Growler's a lot.
Yeah, because of the nature of that space being so small and so tight and not able to have its own hood. We have a donut machine with its own internal hood and filtering system, and it has never lived up to what we've needed it to do.
We're on a track to close the donut shop, and there's been a lot of things to think through. I don't feel as emotionally connected to Raining Donuts as I did to Crepe Cellar, because that was our first restaurant and we operated it for 13 years. And we spent so much time there. So I think my emotional connection was stronger there with Raining Donuts and the idea of closing it. I feel very much like it's the smart thing to do. I think not only because I think we can put out a better, more profitable business concept there, we can also tee ourselves up here at Growler's to be able to reinvest here and make this place better.
Yeah, I think the original goal of the donut shop was, it was a dark corner of Noda with a whole lot of energy. And so, you know, I think our dream was, let's invigorate the outside space here. Let's let people walk around and give them another place to go and not be scared to go down 35th Street. So lighting it up, lighting the trees up, but just having energy there, I think it's really helped. It's really helped Noda. And I think we love that. So we don't want that to go away. So we still want to keep something in the space. And for us dipping our toes in to try to get that done, the donut shop was great. It fit the bill. It hit that. We just needed one piece of equipment and we were able to figure it out. But now that we have we have a new Italian place next door and a lot of things to work with, I think we can
do something better. Well, I appreciate how you talk about that too, because sometimes when, you know, I think about closing Raining Donuts, it feels to me, and I don't know if this is a gender thing, but it feels sad. Like we failed in some way. You know, anytime you close a business, there's a little bit of that, like, oh, it didn't make it. But I think the way you've put it is right, in that maybe that concept doesn't have legs, but the win there is that we were able to put a concept into that window, create more vibrancy on that street, make it feel safer, put lights in the trees. It feels better out there. And now, as entrepreneurs, our job is just to make it better. And for us, making it better is changing it into an entirely different concept. Do you want a little give a little background on what we're talking about doing
in the space? I think we still only have 82 square feet. So the donut machine takes a big amount of space up. But with us being able to prep in the rest of the, you know, the kitchen area, we do have some options. So I think the dream is we have a little spot that's a little deli, a little sandwich spot. Only 5 sandwiches, though. We have to limit it to 5 and maybe one special sandwich. One type of bread. I've had a blast working on the rolls for...
I know you have. I got to witness that. You and Isabella and a chef or two working on the Kaiser rolls.
Yeah, it's fun presenting stuff backwards to Savannah, our pastry chef, where...
Hey, what do you mean?
Where I went and did the work. And the reason that I'm kind of starting off doing it is I need to completely understand what's involved with making this bread from scratch and how hard it is, because I don't want to ask the team to do it if this is an impossible task.
Mm-hmm.
But it's really, really fun task. And we're kind of doing a Kaiser roll riff, and it's really fun to kind of shape the Kaiser rolls and do the knots.
What is special about a Kaiser roll? What is the
I love the round bun idea, but most of the store-bought ones, like, it really needs to be fresh and special. The bread is super, super important and kind of the highlight of that sandwich. But I love that size, especially, you know, for lunch. I feel like a foot long is maybe a little too much for me. I really like that size. And then, it's hand-shaped. And then you make the shape of it by basically tying it in a knot.
Mm-hmm.
And then you kind of can put your poppy seeds or Benny seeds or sesame seeds on top to kind of finish it off. But it's just a beautiful piece of bread, and it's great for sandwiches.
I love that. And with, you know, moving to a sandwich concept from, you know, donuts, let's talk about, like, just in terms of profitability, or like, why make that change? What are the biggest impactful things? We've talked about there's the air filtration issue that we know is impacting both the donut shop, but then also Growler's Poorhouse, that's a big reason for us to close down the donut shop in itself, is because it's impacting another business that we have. But what else about sandwiches and having a deli you think makes it a good business to go into versus donuts?
Well, I think it's kind of the same thing that we went when we were doing crepes, where you're maxed out. You know, a donut is $2. Mm-hmm. So being able to kind of get to a product that's $12 or $14 with a side is a much, we don't have to sell quite as many, but if we do sell that many, our revenue, you know, could be 5 or 6 times what it is at the donut shop. Now, donuts are extremely profitable. There's, you know, very little that goes into them. We make our mix in-house. So the cost per donut is very, very small, and most of the cost is labor. But the profitability is going to go down a little bit, but our revenue per sale should be, you know, 4 or 5 times as much.
Mm-hmm. I also think the trend towards third-party delivery is a huge thing, that with sandwiches, we can capitalize on more day parts, I think, and potentially get more product out the door.
Well, we're struggling here. I think, you know, opening a full restaurant for lunch, Haberdish is the only thing.
Yeah.
We used to have all of our restaurants open for lunch, and we're struggling having a full restaurant open for lunch. So if we want to hit that lunch crowd, I think for us, having one or two employees running a sandwich shop is a much better way to jump into that lunch crowd, and also the delivery. The DoorDash is great.
That's right. So I guess, you know, as business owners, entrepreneurs, there can be a lot of difficult decisions that we have to make in closing a business. I mean, that in itself is risk, closing a business. And, you know, when we own the real estate, as we do here, opening that new business, there's actually a lot of joy in the closing of it. And that's not always the case because some people are literally dissolving something and having it go away. But thinking about, you know, entrepreneurs and business owners out there, what do you think is a key takeaway or a couple takeaways as far as when you know to close a business and how do you just decide, rip the Band-Aid off and move forward?
I think the big thing is realizing that every business has a lifespan. Even Apple has some sort of lifespan. They kind of teach you this in business school. It is 100 years from now, it might not be there. So, you know, the length of businesses are different. But you have to kind of have some feeling about when it's not going to go on forever. So when is that time going to be?
Right. I think my big takeaway from this conversation is just that you've got to, as a leader of your company, be able to step back and look holistically at the issues that you're facing and take away some of the feeling, at least, and get yourself in a spot to make a good decision. Because I know we saw it here, because of a successful transition, we were able to hold on to more jobs, create more jobs, create more value, hopefully create better, fun dining memories for people as well. And I think that's one of the big things about closing a business that's important to think about.
For sure. And I think for us, the synergies are loud and clear. We have an amazing $10,000 Italian slicer. Let's slice some wonderful meat for it. We have amazing Italian prosciutto and salamis and things like that here. And then Growlers also, you know, uses a lot of those same deli meats in different ways. So we've been able to source and find amazing deli meats now and up what we're doing at Growlers. And now we can, you know, add those to a sandwich shop. And yes, if we can hit those numbers and double the revenue over there, kind of like what Everondolo did of doubling the revenue of Crepe Cellar in a short amount of time. Yeah, it's stronger for everybody, more fun for everybody. The staff likes to have people and have energy and be busy.
That's right. Well, we'll keep you all posted on how the transition goes from Raining Donuts to a new sandwich shop. So that'll be a topic for another day. But thank you for joining us. Please like, comment, subscribe. We would love to hear from you. And we'll see you next time on the Jeff and Jamie Feed.